The Wake Up Call with Richard Martin, Mondays and Fridays at 10 a.m. on the Progressive Radio Network. Please be advised that the opinions and views expressed by Richard Martin of GF Investment Services, LLC, are entirely his own and do not necessarily represent the views of the company, its affiliates, or its officers. Investments based off of Richard Martin's comments are unsolicited by the company and are at the sole risk and prejudice of the listener and the investor.
Yes, well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is Richard Martin here from the Wake Up Call, coming to you live from Singapore via New York City on the 26th of August 2011. And if I sound a bit distracted, it's because I'm trying to find out, you know, men are never very good at multitasking. I'm sure you know that. Women are wonderful at it, but men have, to put it mildly, a problem, and I am no exception. Why the market lost 80 points in the space of 60 seconds as I came on the air to talk to you? Well, I don't see the answer to that question, and I frankly haven't got time to research into the news right now to find out what's going on. Suffice it to say, ladies and gentlemen, that the news is grim. I mean, it is absolutely horrifying, and it just remains for me to say, in that context, on a logistical basis, I hope you are all out of your stocks. You have liquidated all your stocks. I had somebody come to me today who listens to the program, who was telling me that she had stocks in her regular account and also in her 401k. My heart missed a beat. If I've said this once, I've said it a thousand times. You should be out of all investments, every single one, without any exceptions whatsoever. And there is no excuse for not taking action. I understand that some of you have not yet moved abroad, and we shall deal with you as the time comes. But right now, everybody should have sold their houses to the extent possible and should certainly have sold all their stocks, bonds, other collateralized investments of any kind. We are moving into a grim and searing deflationary depression, and anybody who is caught red-handed has, frankly, only themselves to blame if they've been listening to the Wake-Up Call. There is absolutely no question. We are barreling towards a massive global debt meltdown. And at this point, as I told you so often, world leaders are absolutely and completely out of solutions. We're waiting for Ben Bernanke to talk his usual rubbish in about an hour's time from Jackson Hole. And I've no idea what he's going to say, but it won't be any good. It'll be, if the best we can hope for is that he has decided that the Fed can no longer shoulder the burden of Congress, whose job it is to sort people out in a depression, try to get them some jobs, and try to steer the economy back to health. This is not the job of the Federal Reserve. And if Bernanke has learned his lesson, you know, now, for the first time, then so be it. Well, you know, I can only congratulate him for having seen the light. But, you know, this is really a result of, over the last 50 years, the greatest debt bubble in the history of the planet, which has been forced onto the nations of the Western world. But now that debt bubble is bursting and the bills are coming due. And ground zero for this particular coming global debt meltdown will be in Europe. 2008 was an American phenomenon. 2011 is a European one. But it's much worse for Europe than it was for the United States, because Europe can't just print more money to cover their debts. There is no equivalent to a Bernanke in Europe. All these countries, including the pigs, must repay their debts in euros. And they're rapidly getting to the point where their debts are going to overwhelm them. The major European banks are very highly leveraged and are also very heavily invested in the sovereign debt of nations such as Greece, Portugal, and Italy. If even one European Union nation defaults, it will start tipping over financial dominoes. If more than one European nation defaults, it will almost certainly cause a cataclysmic wave of bank failures all over Europe. But you see, Germany and the other more financially stable countries of the European Union cannot bail out countries like Greece, Portugal, and Italy indefinitely. Pouring money into Greece is pouring money into a black hole. When you take money from financially stable countries and pour it into a hopeless mess, nothing will change for the hopeless mess, but you will cause the financial condition of the financially stable nations to start deteriorating. Right now, the yield on 2-year Greek bonds is 50%. That's 5-0. Ladies and gentlemen, I have no idea how much knowledge you have of these things, but this is as bad as the worst porn merchant on the street who comes to you, you know, with a baseball bat if you don't pay him. I mean, this is unthinkable. Default is just round the corner, ladies and gentlemen. 50% for 2-year bonds in Greece. I mean, this is the market yelling to us that these are terrible investments and that it is 100% certain that Greece will default. As I just said, Greece cannot fire up the printing presses and print more money, so now it's totally dependent on others to bail it out. Greek government debt now represents almost 160% of GDP, and the average yield on Greek debt is around 15%. So if Greece's debt is rolled over without restructuring, its interest costs alone will amount to approximately 24% of GDP. In other words, if debt pardoning does not occur, nearly a quarter of Greece's economic output will be gobbled up by interest payments. This is quite simply unsustainable. So just how did Greece get into this position? Well, it turns out that big U.S. banks such as Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan Chase played a big role, as usual. And this is an excerpt from a recent article by Andrew Gavin Marshall, and I quote, "In the same way that homeowners take out a second mortgage to pay off their credit card debt, Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan Chase and other U.S. banks helped push government debt far into the future through the derivatives market. This was done in Greece, Italy, and likely several other Eurozone countries as well. In several dozen deals in Europe, banks provided cash up front in return for government payments in the future with those liabilities then left off the books. Because the deals are not listed as loans, they are not listed as debt or liabilities. And so the true debt of Greece and other Eurozone countries was, and likely to a large degree remains, hidden. Greece effectively mortgaged its airports and highways to the major banks in order to get cash up front and keep the loans off the books, classifying them as transactions." So, ladies and gentlemen, crazy though it may seem to you, Wall Street is behind this entire shenanigans. Again, Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan. I mean, in the end, I don't see how these companies can survive. They have caused more untold financial and economic damage, it seems to me, than any other single entity in the history of the world. Well, I leave it up to you, ladies and gentlemen, to decide who is behind the big Wall Street banks. But now Greece is about to collapse, and the people that helped get them into this mess will probably never be held accountable. And when Greece does default, let me tell you, without any question, it is going to have the most grim and dramatic consequences all over Europe. And so basically, without boring you and going into detail, the insolvency of the entire financial system will be laid open. Banks will fail because the Greek and other debts on their books will be exposed as unpayable. Governments will fail as they will openly have to admit defeat. Unrest will soar as the populations of all European countries realize that their representatives have given away their wealth to countries manifestly unable ever to pay it back, with Portugal, Ireland, and Italy also having debt-to-GDP ratios above 100%. Well, the biggest problem, at least in the near term, is Italy. Italy is the fourth largest economy in the European Union. If Italy gets to the point where it needs large bailouts, that itself alone is going to bring down the whole system. The European Union simply does not have enough money to perform an extensive financial rescue of Italy. The exposure that European banks have to Italian debt is massive. If Italian debt goes bad, it's going to take down many, many banks. It's estimated that the European Central Bank is now holding somewhere in the neighborhood of 444 billion euros worth of debt from governments of Greece, Italy, Portugal, Ireland, and Spain. And if you want to know how much that is in dollars, just add half. So that's 600 and some odd billion dollars. The financial consequences of a default by one or more of those nations would be catastrophic. According to London-based think tank Open Europe, the European Central Bank is massively overleveraged, and I quote, "Should the ECB, that's the European Central Bank, see its assets fall by just 4.23% in value, its entire capital base would be wiped out." End of quote. Believe me, when the dominoes begin to tumble in Europe, it's going to take everybody down. The big banks in Europe are leveraged to the hilt, and they are massively exposed to government debt. Remember what happened back in 2008? Back then, Lehman Brothers was leveraged 31 to 1. When things turned bad, Lehman was wiped out very rapidly. Today, major German banks are leveraged 32 to 1. And those banks are currently holding a massive amount of European sovereign debt. Already we are seeing huge signs of trouble at major banks all over Europe. Major banks in Europe, such as UBS, Barclays, Credit Suisse, RBS, and HSBC, have all announced layoffs recently. In fact, when you add them all up, the total number of layoffs announced by these banks just this month is over 4,000. Overall, the grand total of layoffs by European banks so far this year is now up to 67,000. The mood in the financial sector over in Europe is very dark right now. Just consider the following excerpt from a recent Bloomberg article, and I quote, "It's a bloodbath, and I expect things to get worse before they get better." That's Jonathan Evans, chairman of executive search firm Sammons Associates in London. And I continue. I cannot see a lot of those who have lost their jobs getting re-employed. Regardless of how good someone is, no one walks to talk about hiring. Life will be very difficult for 2 or 3 years. End of quote. Well, just like back in 2008 with U.S. banks, we are seeing European banks getting absolutely pummeled right now. A recent article in the Sydney Morning Herald documented some of the carnage, and I quote, "The 46-member Bloomberg Europe Banks and Financial Services Index has fallen 31% this year. Royal Bank of Scotland tumbled 49%, Barclays 44%, and France's Société Générale 48%. Credit Suisse and UBS both reported a 71% drop in investment banking earnings in the second quarter. Revenue at Edinburgh-based Royal Bank of Scotland Securities Unit dropped 35% in the period, while London-based Barclays Capital posted a 27% decline in pre-tax profit. Oh yes, ladies and gentlemen, the European crisis is just getting started. All right, let me regale you with my information. I'm sure some of you are getting sick of it after hearing it for 4 or 5 years, but fortunately we do have some new listeners along the way, and so I feel it incumbent upon me to give out the good news. My name is Richard Martin, and this is the Wake Up Call, in case you didn't know what you were listening to. And the call-in number, toll-free, is 888-874-4888. Again, that's our toll-free number at PRN. And if you will call in and give your name and the subject that you'd like to talk about, our engineer will take it down, inform me through the instant messaging service we have, and I will take your call just as quickly as possible. As you know, ladies and gentlemen, your calls are the priority on my show, so I'll get to them as quickly as I can. Again, the call-in number, 888-874-4888. And if you would prefer to email your comments, you may do so. And my email address, which also remains open throughout the show, and I get to them as fast as I can when they come up, is rm@gfawd.com. That's RM for Richard Martin, at GFAWD for Global Financial Advisory Wealth Design .com. Once more, rm@gfawd.com. And then, last but not least, for those of you who have personal questions that you would like to discuss with me in private, and I'm getting really a lot of those. I'm probably getting between 10 and 15 calls like this a day right now, but this is a pleasure to talk to each and every one of you, ladies and gentlemen. So if you have anything on your mind that you would like to discuss with me, please feel free. Call me at area code 941. That is not a Singapore area code. This is a Sarasota, Florida area code, 941-441-1682. Again, 941-441-1682. Now, given the disparity of time difference here, which is exactly 12 hours from the East Coast, please just call in any time, and if I don't pick up the phone, then just leave your name and the phone number, and I will get back to you as quickly as possible. Again, my private number is 941-441-1682. Okay? Well, not that there aren't huge debt problems around the rest of the globe as well. Japan has a national debt that is now over 200% of GDP, and they are really struggling to recover from the recent disasters that devastated that nation. Moody's has just downgraded Japanese government debt one notch to AA3, and more downgrades could be coming. For now, Japan is still able to borrow huge piles of money very cheaply. But if that changes, Japan could be wiped out very quickly. Now, of course, the nation with the biggest debt of all is the United States. And at the moment, the U.S. national debt is sitting at a grand total of, wait for it, $14,649,289,357.85. Well, fortunately, the U.S. is able, like Japan, to borrow massive amounts of money very, very cheaply right now. But when that changes, it's going to be absolutely cataclysmic for the economy. According to the Congressional Budget Office, the budget deficit for the federal government will be about $1.28 trillion this year. This will be the third year in a row that America has had a budget deficit of over $1 trillion. And just to put that in perspective, from George Washington to Ronald Reagan, the U.S. government racks up a grand total of about $1 trillion of debt. But this year alone, the U.S. will go $1.28 trillion more into debt. At the moment, the U.S. national debt is expanding by about $2.5 million every single minute. It is truly hard to put into words how absolutely foolish all this is. I mean, they haven't even solved the problems caused by the last financial crisis. The real estate market is still a gigantic mess. Purchases of both new and previously existing homes in the U.S. continue to fall. But there will never be a housing recovery until there is a jobs recovery. And millions of American jobs are still being shipped overseas. We have truly entered very frightening times. As I said at the beginning, we are on the verge of a massive global debt meltdown, and nobody has the slightest idea how to deal with it or what's going to happen next. Okay, well, news from Singapore. Tomorrow we have the presidential elections, and a couple of interesting things that you might like to know. There are four candidates, and they are all called Tan. Their last names are Tan, each and every one of them. Tan is a very common name. It's a common Chinese name, and it's very, very common in Singapore. It's like Smith or Brown in Anglo-Saxon countries. So they're all called Tan. Now, to become a presidential candidate, it is not sufficient to be a mediocre B-movie actor. You actually have to have some qualifications. And a panel is set up shortly before the elections to take in all the candidates who would like to present themselves for the presidency. And their candidatures are examined, and the successful ones are announced, and they proceed to go to the hustings and flog their wares, as it were. So what that really means is that you know for sure that any one of these four gentlemen will be excellent presidents, whoever they are, whichever one wins. I have my personal favorite. His name is Dr. Tony Tan, and well, I like him, so there you go. But the others are all perfectly acceptable. An interesting thing about the presidency in Singapore is that it's very different from the American presidency. The American system requires that a president be of a certain party, and I actually have always found that strange, because it seems to me that a president should be a president of the entire nation. Having him, in effect, represent the interests of You know, just those who vote for a particular party, a political party, seems to be counterproductive. But, you know, that's how it works in the States. In Singapore, the president has no powers over the government. He doesn't sign off on legislation. He doesn't advise the government. He is basically almost like a constitutional monarch. In fact, the presidency is based on the British monarchy, where the monarch has no real formal powers. I mean, she does, actually. The Queen does have a few powers. I won't go into them. But basically, there isn't much to talk about in terms of what they do. But in Singapore, it's pretty much the same, except that the Singaporean president has power over the budget. In other words, a situation like happens in the States, where, you know, Bernanke will print money like it's going out of fashion, or Congress will spend money pretty much for political purposes, would be impossible in Singapore, because the president can veto the spending of money, which seems to me also another very good aspect of what a president does. A president travels, like presidents and heads of state do in other countries, representing the country, hopefully doing a bit of a sales job for the country. He actually doesn't live there, but he has a gorgeous house in which he could live, which is actually the old British governor's residence, which is called the Istana, which is Malay for palace. Used to be called Government House under the British. My wife and I actually went to visit it 2 weeks ago when they had a holiday, and they opened it up about four times a year. So it was an interesting and impressive experience to see these gorgeous grounds right in the middle of Singapore. And the presidential house where only work takes place. Presidents have not lived there since independence, and although the president could live there, they tend not to do so. So there you are. The president is basically there to mastermind the entire country, and he is considered above politics. So we will find out tomorrow who won. Look in your newspapers, and if it is indeed Dr. Tony Tan, think of me, and I shall be celebrating his victory. One of the reasons I like Tony Tan is because he wants to keep the presidential functions as they are. A couple of the others are more sort of activists. They want to be able to breathe down the neck of the government and advise the government and make decisions and tell the prime minister what to do. This seems to me to be over and above what is necessary. You know, if you in America have voted for a Congress, that Congress should be able to take care of the legislation of the country. The president shouldn't really have to get involved, I would have thought, but as you know, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not a very politically minded person. I try to stay out of these things. So my very paltry opinions shouldn't be taken too seriously. Anyway, there you are. The Singapore presidential election, Saturday, the 27th of August. Well, many of you will have noticed the substantial fall in the price of crude oil over the last few days and weeks. This comes, of course, as a surprise to many people who are still obsessed over the idea of peak oil and whether we're going to run out of it by the end of next week. As I'm sure a lot of you know, I have consistently stated that peak oil for me is a myth put out by the oil industry to try to levitate prices, keep them high. The reality is that there are major discoveries taking place all the time, all over the world, which are, for some reason, played down in the mainstream press. For example, did you know that Israel has just made a world-class offshore gas discovery that's going to change the whole paradigm in the Middle East? I bet you didn't know that. Israel potentially can become a net exporter of natural gas. Well, Hubbard came out with this whole concept of peak oil, as I'm sure you know, and Matt Simmons really popularized it 5 or 6 years ago. It didn't take into account the unconventional potential and the improvements in technology unconventional oil and gas projects like the oil sands in Canada and the shale projects in the U.S. are all now major sources of oil and gas, whereas 20 years ago they were just concepts or early stage development. 5 years ago, no one thought that there would be unconventional shale production in Europe. Well, it's starting now, and it's going to change the energy dependence of European countries on Russian natural gas. There's new technology coming on board, which wasn't even conceptualized 10 years ago. Now they're producing, and in 20 years, who knows what there will be. Investors need to be aware of the changes, but also be careful not to get caught investing in someone's science project. The problem with most of the alternative energies, you know, solar and wind, is that they are not economic. Both solar and wind have major limitations and are not primarily electricity producers. Solar doesn't work at night, and wind power isn't dependable enough because of variable weather conditions. Neither are primary base load producers dependable sources of energy. Run of river is better than wind and solar power from an economic standpoint, but unfortunately it's also only about 45 to 60% base load power. It's quite interesting, as a matter of fact. I'm here in the office, of course I work at night, and I have a calculator that I've had for years in the States. It always worked fine. It's a solar calculator, but of course it doesn't work in Singapore because there's no sun when I work. And so I've had to make alternative arrangements. I think I'll survive. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's stop. Let's take our break, and I will be right back. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we're back. And I got busy during the break. And in fact, I did get an email from Nathan Privett telling us that the text of the speech, of Bernanke's speech, was released at 10 a.m., just after the show began. And, of course, that was what caused the market to collapse, because, in fact, according to that speech, it appears that there is no policy change. QE3 remains on the table, but is not something the Fed is moving towards on now. So that's good news, and quite frankly was pretty much expected, certainly by me. So Nathan, thank you very much for that. Okay, well, listen, we've talked a lot about what's been going on, especially in the financial world. Let me just conclude that discussion with a quick word about the banks in the U.S. Quite frankly, and not to put too fine a point to it, they are in dire straits. Do not be fooled by the 2008 bailouts and how they fixed the banking system. They did no such thing. The banking system was most certainly not saved. The massive injection of liquidity temporarily rescued the day-to-day operation of banks, but it didn't repair them. Indeed, pouring billions into nearly identical management teams that mismanaged the risk, over-leveraged exposure, and drove banks off the cliff in the first place simply laid the groundwork for a new crisis, which is almost here. Entirely unnecessary and entirely the work of the do-gooders. So this is what was done in 2008. And you see, when you hear this, you understand why none of the underlying problems have been repaired. There were four major mistakes that were made. First of all, bank holdings remained stuffed with declining assets, primarily in housing and derivative holdings. Another leg down in housing could tip many banks over the edge. Then, bank balance sheets were allowed to remain unnecessarily opaque. Remember how the famous FASB 157 eliminated fair value and allowed the banks to lie about the value of their holdings? Well, that obviously didn't fix balance sheets problems, but instead allowed banks to hide them. Well, thirdly, capitalization in the banks remains too thin. Leverage should be mandated back to the pre-2005 rule change of no more than 12 to 1. As we have learned, management does not keep adequate capital unless mandated to do so. You see, sufficient capital reserves cuts into profits. And finally, compensation and bonus schemes were not significantly changed after bailouts, except during loan repayments. Thus, management and traders still have the same upside to roll the dice, but do not have the downside risks, which remains on shareholders and taxpayers. If the powers that be had simply not done these things and let the banks go under, it would have created a transparent, unleveraged, adequately capitalized banking system that would be contributed to, rather than detracting from, the U.S. economy. What we have today instead is an over-concentrated set of banking behemoths barely off life support. Very soon, these banks will come crawling back to Uncle Sam, as usual, for another bailout. Remember that. You heard it here first. All right, well, let us take a couple of emails. Anne wrote in and she said, "Hi, Richard. Hope this email is not too brash, but," and of course I will continue, "what was your point in using your valuable time and efforts in researching Warren Buffett's comment about his birthday? He is a," won't curse, but you can insert any word you choose, exclamation mark. "I value the time that you have on your show to give us good information in a time when it all really sucks. Don't see any answers to the dilemma we, mankind, have gotten ourselves into. I don't watch TV, but listen to Jon Stewart's show once in a while, and he shows enough Fox Noise clips to make me gag. He did a pretty funny show on the 15th about the poor versus the rich, if you care to watch it. Sad, but guess gotta keep the sense of humor. Finding it hard to find the funny stuff. Really miss George Carlin. Just another bit from me. Sincerely, Anne." And I certainly second that bit about George Carlin, Anne. It's a great loss to mankind. Great guy. Great, great comedian. Excellent understanding of how to meld in humor and the serious side of, or the seamy side of life. Okay, well, I think there was a little question woven into that email, which was why I lost my valuable time and efforts in researching Warren Buffett's comment. My comment, for those of you who didn't listen to the show earlier this week, was the fact that Warren Buffett misrepresented the activity of the stock market on his birthday in 1931. It was actually, or 1930, I think, on the 30th of June, 1930. He said that the market hit its high point on that day. Why he said that, I don't know. It didn't hit its high point in August. It hit it in April. No idea why he said that. But anyway, so I researched it because, quite frankly, I needed to confirm that I wasn't completely crazy, because for the world's richest man, the world's most successful investor, not even to know what happened in the Dow Jones on his birthday seemed to me so far-fetched that I felt I must have made a mistake, but apparently not. It happened. That's the answer to that one. Okay, Sandy Mejia wrote in an email as follows. "The riots in Britain were terrible, to say the least. We've also had some here in the States, including Philadelphia. Now, I know there is hostility, anger, and righteous indignation going on with the lower and middle class, and rightfully so, but I almost feel that they are rioting against the wrong people. I can't prevent a riot, but if riots are to begin everywhere, it should not be against those who have worked hard to build their own businesses. These are their people. It is the rich who need to have the rude awakening and to have their day disrupted, not ours. If you can reach the people on your show to use wisdom and think about whose property they are destroying, it's the wrong people. I'm not advocating rioting against the rich, but if you're going to form some sort of constructive demonstration, it's against the rich, corporations, government, and financial industries. Thanks, Richard. I love you, and keep on doing what you do. Sandy Mejia. Well, thank you for that, Sandy. Appreciate the heads up. Well, we owe a debt of Frank Devlin for the following, which I think speaks for itself. Americans spend $36 million at Walmart every hour of every day. This works out to $20,928 profit every minute. Walmart will sell more from January the 1st to St. Patrick's Day, March the 17th, than Target sells all year. Walmart is bigger than Home Depot, plus Kroger, plus Target, plus Sears, plus Costco, plus Kmart combined. Walmart employs 1.6 million people, is the world's largest private employer, and most speak English. Walmart is the largest company in the history of the world. Walmart now sells more food than Kroger and Safeway combined, and keep in mind they did this in only 15 years. During this same period, 31 big supermarket chains sought bankruptcy. Walmart now sells more food than any other store in the world. Walmart has approximately 3,900 stores in the USA, of which 2,906 are supercenters. This is 1,000 more than it had 5 years ago. This year, 7.2 billion different purchasing experiences will occur at Walmart stores. Earth's population is approximately 6.5 billion. 90% of all Americans live within 15 miles of a Walmart. Walmart has gross sales that total more than the total revenue of all the countries in the world except six. Maybe we should hire the guys who ran Walmart to fix the economy. To the president and all 535 voting members of the legislature, both parties, it is now official. You are all corrupt morons. The U.S. Postal Service was established in 1775. You have had 234 years to get it right, and it is broke. Social Security was established in 1935. You have had 74 years to get it right, and it is broke. Fannie Mae was established in 1938. You have had 71 years to get it right, and it is broke. War on Poverty started in 1964. You've had 45 years to get it right. $1 trillion of our money is confiscated each year and transferred to the poor, and they only want more. Medicare and Medicaid were established in 1965. You have had 44 years to get it right, and they are broke. Freddie Mac was established in 1970. You've had 39 years to get it right, and it's broke. The Department of Energy was created in 1977 to lessen our dependence on foreign oil. It has ballooned to 16,000 employees with a budget of $24 billion a year, and we import more oil than ever before. You had 32 years to get it right, and it's an abysmal failure. You have failed in every government service you have shoveled down our throats while overspending our tax dollars. And you want Americans to believe you can be trusted with a government-run healthcare system? You think you can run the auto industry, the banking system? Maybe we ought to kick your egghead buddy bums out of office and hire Walmart to run the government. Walmart seems to know how to run a business. Well, those last few lines were in caps, ladies and gentlemen, which is why I gave them extra emphasis. And again, thanks to Frank Devlin for that refreshing piece of prose. All right. Well, let me talk about the, back again to Europe, the repeated rescue plans and equally fatuous statements about new committees and Euro solidarity of German and French presidents Merkel and Sarkozy could no longer mask the central problem, which is that countries with very different economies are guilt to the same currency in the absence of a fiscal transfer union which would otherwise facilitate growth, not ongoing economic depression and political turmoil. Now, I've, you know, really dedicated this show to the European situation, and I really feel that I'd like to just put some closure to it with talking to you a little bit more about this, ladies and gentlemen, so bear with me. You see, rather than attempting to stave off a double-dip recession by easing fiscal and monetary policy, the European Central Bank has gone careening off in the opposite direction. The Euro project is consequently being turned into an instrument of economic torture from sado-monetarists, such as Jean-Claude Trichet, who see each bailout as a way for irresponsible nations to offload their liabilities onto their fitter neighbors, rather than considering the flawed institutional structures which created the need for these stopgap measures in the first place. Interest rates have been raised, member states have been forced into self-defeating austerity programs which destroy growth and make underlying debt dynamics even worse. It is hard to imagine a more tragic and self-defeating type of policy mix. You know, you have to wonder how long the voters in the rich countries will stand for this. Perhaps not that much longer, as the Germans in particular appear to have no stomach to withstand the costs required to save the currency union. So let's just have a quick look at the problem at the heart of the Euro project. But as has been noted by many critics of the Common Currency Project, the relation of member countries to the European Monetary Union is more similar to the relation of the treasuries of member states to the United States, to the Fed. In the U.S., you see, states have no power to create currency. In this circumstance, taxes really do finance state spending, and states really do have to borrow, which amounts to selling bonds to the markets, as you all know. And that's in order to spend in excess of tax receipts. Just look at California.
From Consumer Reports, TRX, a claim check. I'm Maurice Sprans. The TRX Suspension Trainer claims it can make your body a machine using fast and effective workouts. The box says its vector resistance ignites your metabolism and targets every muscle. Consumer Reports bought a TRX Pro Pack with Door Anchor from Amazon for $200 plus $735 shipping. Included with the device is a basic training DVD with a 35-minute workout. It's also available at the manufacturer's website, trxtraining.com. To put the claims to the test, 7 male and 7 female staffers of different heights, ages, and fitness levels worked out with the TRX in our labs. To use it, you need the door anchor or optional TRX X-mount, which you screw into a sturdy wall or ceiling beam. You also need an 8x6-foot area to work out. Your weight creates the resistance for the muscle-building exercises. Lo and behold, the TRX works. Our workout panelists liked it, and our fitness expert said it can effectively train major muscle groups while working your core. The DVD is comprehensive and shows how to intensify each exercise by changing your body's position. That's what vector resistance refers to. The TRX, though, can be challenging for a person with limited flexibility, mobility, or strength. And don't expect to look like Ms. Amazing Abs in the DVD. Not at first, anyway. I'm Ernie Sprant for Consumer Reports, online at consumerreports.org.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, sorry about that. I don't know what happened. The line just cut out. And so I was talking about how the states in the United States, the individual states, finance themselves as opposed to the states of Europe, which, of course, depend on the European Central Bank. Now, in the states, purchasers of state bonds do worry about the creditworthiness of states, and the ability of American states to run deficits depends, at least in part, on the perception of creditworthiness. functionally, each nation state operates the way individual American states do, but only with individual state treasuries. And that's why Ireland and Latvia are in a mess and suffer from solvency issues. It's also why California suffers from a solvency issue, or Italy, or Spain. At this juncture, however, there isn't enough time to create a United States of Europe, which is why the ECB has resumed its bond buying operations to put a floor on the bonds and alleviate concerns about the solvency issues of the individual nation states. The hope is that by backstopping the bonds, the ECB can persuade the markets that countries like Italy and Greece are not insolvent and that these countries will resume funding them. Now, clearly, with credit spreads blowing out again, this has proved to be a fatuous hope because the scale of the purchases have not been large enough to be credible, especially now that the contagion is spreading into core countries such as France. At this juncture, then, it seems more likely that the Germans will try to save themselves by pulling out of the Eurozone, and then they will recapitalize their own banks as they did following German reunification. They will take the Benelux countries with them, which have already closely converged with Germany's economy, and have a greater Deutschmark block and buy the rest of Europe on the cheap with their newly reconstituted Deutschmarks. The Club Med, such as Greece, Italy, and Spain, those countries are saved because the euro plunges and they get to export their way out of this. The euro will then become a soft currency country again, and these countries will go back to living with higher inflation, higher exports, and probably a generally more comfortable way of life. In any case, there appear to be no happy outcomes here, although, as Tom Ferguson says, if you want to have a happy ending, go see a Disney film. We do appear to be entering a most dangerous time for Europe, in fact, probably the most dangerous time since World War II. And none of this is going to work, and it's going to be very, very tough for lower middle class Europeans to survive. And I have no words other than sympathy for these people. The government's got them into this mess, courtesy of Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan, and frankly, the governments are the only people who can possibly get them out. But the governments have no plan, no idea, and frankly, no hope of dealing with this situation until they let the financial interests go. Then they let them go bankrupt till they clean up the financial mess and then start again. And that applies just as much to Europe as it does to the United States. Unfortunately, I don't see it happening in the near term. All right, we have a caller. We have a caller, and I've just lost the caller off the top here. Todd from San Francisco, who wants to know what the benefits of putting your money in T-bills are opposed to a credit union. Todd, hi. Sorry to take so long to get to you. How are you?
Not a problem. Hi. Thank you, Richard. You had mentioned on a recent program that money market T-bills was a good place to put money, and I just wanted to know what the benefits of that is over just leaving it in the credit union where we have it right now.
Well, it depends how long you're going to leave it there, Todd. I mean, if this is just money waiting to be spent, you're probably okay. But you see, if I give you advice about credit unions, you're pretty sort of much cast off on a boat on your own at that point, because you won't have me holding your hand when I tell you that I think credit unions are perhaps not the best place to be, and you should go into a Treasury bill money market fund or into Treasury bills themselves. All in all, things are so dire and so very uncertain these days, Todd, that you are best off just, as it were, I was going to say throwing caution to the winds. That's not what I mean. I mean the opposite of that, actually. Just taking your money and putting it into Treasury bills and leaving it there. Treasury bills, really, frankly, are safer than cash. They are going to be the last of the government debts to be defaulted on, so you are absolutely safe, in my opinion, putting your money into Treasury bills or a Treasury bill money market fund. Credit unions may or may not be okay. They're certainly safer than regular banks, in my opinion, because they're run by local organizations with local CPAs dealing with the community. So they are safer. But things are happening so fast these days, there is just no way of knowing how soon things will come to a pretty turn. So my advice is just to put the stuff into Treasury bills and forget about it.
Okay.
Well,
thank you, Richard.
I'm sorry I took long to get to you, and I haven't got a chance really to follow up on this because we've come to the end of the show. But I do appreciate the call. And ladies and gentlemen, as I say, we have come to the end of the show, and so I wish you a wonderful weekend. I look forward to talking to you again on Monday. And so until then, this is Richard Martin saying bye-bye.